Hello, I'm Steve Punt.
And I'm Hugh Dennis.
With us are Zoe Lyons, Lucy Porter, Rachel Paris and Luke Kempner. And this is...
The Now Show!
Thank you, and we are recording this show on Friday lunchtime as MPs are debating the withdrawal agreement in the Commons. And excitingly for us, the result is due just after we finish recording. So we don't know what's happened by the time this is broadcast.
We may not be on at all. It might just be a voice telling you to go quickly and quietly to the nearest shelter. We also have Nigel Farage's march to leave due to arrive in London after its arduous three-week walk from Sunderland. So if you hear a noise during the show, that might be Nigel's helicopter landing.
And yet this was the week leading up to March the 29th, the day we were supposed to leave, a day when Britain was going to be a festive blur of street parties, fireworks displays, Boris Johnson opening his garden bridge by flying across it on a zip wire, while showering grateful citizens with blue passports.
In Brussels, of course, Michel Barnier would be giving his press conference.
I was completely out-negotiated. We have never before given any non-member country full access to the single market, let alone agreed to pay them for the privilege. But what could we do? We need the Marmite. And the format rights to Pointless, they held all the cards.
But of course, that world was not to be. And in fact, only one of this week's original planned celebrations actually went ahead.
The symbolic flight by British Airways of a plane refusing to go to Dusseldorf. And going to Edinburgh instead.
And the sight of the group of people trapped inside it who'd arrived at a destination nowhere near the one they'd been promised.
While the pilot said that if they gave her just one more chance to get there, she'd resign the moment they landed. Back in the real world, though, last week was rather different. On Saturday night, there was an alleged cabinet coup that mysteriously disappeared the moment the Sunday papers had gone to press.
Yes, and then on Sunday, Theresa May invited a group of the MPs most opposed to her deal to Chequers, only to realise she didn't have enough food for 400 people.
Jacob Rees-Mogg turned up with his son Peter in tow, apparently because when Jacob himself was a similar age...
My father took me to Chequers to meet Edward Heath.
This was a very public-spirited anecdote on his part, I thought, because he'd obviously heard that the Oxford English Dictionary are having trouble with the exact definition of the word privilege and decided to help out. After Chequers, though, it was a bit of a tricky week for JRM. First, he changed his mind about the deal, saying that
half a loaf is better than no bread,
which is a proverb from a book published in 1546, which he'd found in the modern literature section of his library. He then changed his mind back again when he heard the DUP weren't on board, and finally he insulted fellow MP Nick Bowles for having a
characteristically Wickhamist opinion, highly intelligent but fundamentally wrong.
Which is apparently how an old Etonian throws shade at someone who went to Winchester College. It's either that or a your mater joke. Talking of which, Boris was there, obviously.
He also changed his mind afterwards. Both he and Ian Duncan Smith said they now viewed the Prime Minister's deal as the least worst option. By Monday, Boris was writing that May had
chickened out of Brexit.
And he urged the Prime Minister to
channel the spirit of Moses in Exodus and say, let my people go.
It's an interesting parallel. Moses, of course, left by parting the Red Sea and walking across, which he had to do because someone had cocked up the ferry contracts. All this panic, though, and lunch invites, was, of course, due to last week's commitment to allow MPs to take over the agenda on Wednesday, debate various options for Brexit, and then vote yes or no on a whole series of them.
Yes, and this is an actual recording of the House of Commons announcing the first seven results. First batch of motions there, then more results came in.
No, no, no.
And the overall verdict was...
No.
Arlene Foster live in concert. I mean, how many options can they reject?
There's no limit.
As if debating eight different propositions wasn't enough, a 1922 committee meeting started halfway through, like the day had been timetabled by Glastonbury. It was this meeting that saw Theresa May's final roll of the dice, the ultimate weapon in her armoury, to persuade people to back her.
If you vote for my deal, I will go away and you will never have to see me again.
This turned out to be a very compelling argument. After all, saying, I'll do my job, hand over the work, and then disappear from the public eye without any further comment, is an attitude Morrissey fans have been hoping for the last 20 years or so. Many admired her for falling on her sword, although not Jeremy Corbyn.
The sword is a weapon of violence, and I abhor violence. That's not something I would do. I myself would head for my allotment and fall on my gourd.
He loves his allotment, Jeremy. You'll often find him there, just sitting on the fence.
Theresa May's place in history, though, is assured. She will go down as the woman who spent 2 years trying to keep promises she didn't make on behalf of people who made promises they didn't have to keep.
Knowing that the people who made the promises it turned out couldn't be kept would always be able to blame her for not keeping them. Eventually, there'll have to be some sort of compromise, of course.
Yes, in the words of the song, if you can't leave the way you love, love the way you leave. Donald Tusk talks this week about never abandoning the pro-Remain portion of the UK, but from what the EU was actually doing this week, you wonder whether they actually want to get rid of us.
They kept introducing things, apparently to make themselves unpopular, to do with car regulation and internet freedom, and on Tuesday, the EU voted to scrap daylight saving time. Member states will be able to choose if they want to change their clocks. The countries that opt in would move their clocks for the final time on the last Sunday of October 2021.
Although they don't have to get round to changing the numbers on their oven display until sometime in the 23rd century. What all this means, though, is that post-Brexit, Ireland could potentially have two different time zones. South of the border, it will be 2021.
And north of the border, it will be 1972. All over again.
Thank you very much.
And now, delighted that her tour Entry-Level Human is finally over and she can put her feet up somewhere other than the Travel Lodge, would you please welcome Zoe Lyon?
I want to talk to you about dates. Not the brown sticky ones that you buy at Christmas forgetting you hate them, don't eat them and then throw them away at Easter, but rather calendar dates. We've all got used to getting those invites instructing us to save the date for somebody's significant event. A pal's big birthday milestone that doesn't evoke excitement, but rather a distressing realization of the advancing years, lack of pension, and the creep towards shoes done up with Velcro. Or a wedding in a sodding teepee in some ridiculous off-the-grid venue that requires 8 modes of transport to get there, 3 nights away, and a credit card bill that you'll still be paying off long after they've divorced. As a nation, we've all been collectively saving a date for the last 2 years. The 88th day of 2019 has been indelibly marked on our minds. I suspect Farage has it inked on his bum under another tattoo of a naughty devil with the words, horny little lever. The 29th of March. Promised or threatened so much, depending on your point of view. It wasn't going to be a line in the sand, but rather a dramatic and decisive cut. It was going to be our Independence Day, a date mentioned so often that it had taken on ethereal heavenly qualities. The 29th of March was destined for historical greatness, set for a 4-page Wikipedia entry, but its high hopes have come crashing back to earth with a sickening thud, like a racing pigeon with sudden onset cramp in both wings. No matter what happens with meaningful vote 2.5 or 33 or a third or whatever we're on now, it's clear it isn't quite going to be the big ticket item we've been told we'd ordered. I don't think it's fair, though, that a date that has been subject to so much discussion should be denied any recognition and forgotten as quickly as an X Factor winner. It might not have been the John or Paul we were promised, but it's still a Ringo. And a Ringo's still worth remembering, if only for his charity work highlighting the plight of talking trains. So let's celebrate the 29th of March and all that it has stood for. It's the feast day of Gladys. Medieval Welsh queen, who, once she was finished with political life, became a reclusive hermit and later a saint. Unlike politicians today, who, once they are done with politics, can't wait to get on Strictly Come Dancing. On the 29th of March, 1886, the first batch of Coca-Cola was brewed by Dr. John Pemberton, and the original recipe for Coke contained cocaine. And once we've left the EU and are no longer obliged to adhere to European food standards, I should be lobbying to have it brought back. It makes perfect sense. The amphetamine rush helps counter the fattening effects of the sugar, resulting in thinner, more productive kids. Yes, friends, taking back control. Politicians might not change, but attitudes do. And on the 29th of March 2014, the first same-sex marriages took place in England and Wales. The change in law meant that I was able to marry my partner. My wife is Dutch, so, well, obviously she'll have to go back. She doesn't read the papers, I haven't told her. Pack your silly little wooden shoes and off your pop. That's what I said, it's the will of the people, love. Obviously, she's happy with us splitting the value of the house 50-50. For her, it's very much a cultural thing. Across the globe, Taiwan celebrates Youth Day on the 29th, a holiday that is getting harder to enjoy with every passing year, as the country's citizens are on average so old that it has what is called a hyper-aged population. Think Eastbourne on a massive scale. The three people left under 25 years old to spend the day showing the elderly how to set the Sky Plus box. So, as we leave the 29th of March 2019 behind us, let's ponder the significance we place on a single date. Brexit was never going to be about one day. We are brutally aware now that it is a complicated, frustrating process. Trapped on an unforgiving continent, Scott of the Antarctic made his last diary entry on the 29th of May, 1912. He wrote, "The ends cannot be far." Well, no one is sure when this will end, and Laura Koonsberg will finally take a day off and be able to wash her smalls. Could be the 12th of April, perhaps, or maybe even the 22nd of May. Who knows? Pick a year. I dare you. Thank you very much.
The European Union. I don't know if you've heard of it. It's a sort of confederation of nations with a common trade area. Has decided that from 2022, all cars built in the EU will be speed restricted.
Now, obviously, we know what you're thinking. You're thinking, ah, but we won't be in the EU by then.
True, but we won't be building any cars by then either. And even if we did, all cars in Britain will still be speed limited by the EU because the 30-mile queues to get through Dover will have backed up the entire country.
Now, there was a lot of unease about all this, and the president of the AA made this compelling point about the technology.
Dodrum cars are fitted with speed limiters, but they still seem to crash.
That is true, but crashing isn't the entire point of driving, unless you're really into insurance fraud. It seems odd for the head of Britain's leading motoring organisation to react to such a huge piece of motoring legislation with a comment on the fairground version of motoring. Maybe one day he'll move on to be head of the Rail Passengers Association.
The biggest problem for rail passengers today is, unquestionably, all the ghosts and spiders continually jumping out at them and going, "Ooh!"
Now, a survey claimed that 9 out of 10 UK drivers back speed-limiting technology, which I'm prepared to bet any money is because they were asked a heavily slanted question. Something like,
"Do you back technology that might save the lives of children and small defenceless puppies?"
I'm willing to bet the question was probably not,
"Do you back technology that will automatically force your car to brake and is also used in dodgem cars which still crash?"
So you can get people to support anything if you phrase it cunningly enough. Or failing that, say you'll resign. Because this really is going to change motoring out of all recognition.
"This is the Ferrari 488 GTB. It has a twin-turbocharged 3.9-litre V8 engine. It can do 0 to 60 in 2.7 seconds. It has a top speed of 70. Like everything else, I'm going to find the person responsible for this law, ask them to cook me a steak, and hope they say no."
Now, of course, it should be remembered that the idea of all this, obviously, is to lead to safer roads and very bored police officers.
How fast was that one, Sarge?
70.
That one?
70.
Those two?
Both exactly 70. I hate this job now.
So do I. Hang on, this is a 30.
And movies, of course, are never going to be the same again, whether it's daring robberies.
Load the gold into the minis and don't worry. These Champagne Charlies will get you out of Turin at exactly the same speed as everything else on four wheels.
Or whether it's the disappointing new thriller in which Vin Diesel, in an older BMW, is stuck on a single carriageway road behind Jason Statham in a brand new one, in Not Fast and Absolutely Furious.
And as if Brexit wasn't controversial enough, an even more passionate argument broke out earlier in the week on an equally serious subject, a Channel 5 countdown show called Britain's Favourite Crisps.
Now, I must confess, I quite enjoyed Britain's Favourite Crisps, although it did ruin Britain's Favourite Dinner straight afterwards. Just like Mum warned that it would. What Channel 5 cunningly did was recreate a near-identical furore from 2 years ago when a student put a pyramid of their favourite crisps online and a row ensued.
They even nicked the design of the pyramid with God tier at the top and crap tier at the bottom. But what made this row even more furious was that the British public voted Pringles top.
Exactly, ladies and gentlemen. You see, Pringles, as many, many people pointed out, are not even crisps. They are stackable hyperbolic paraboloids of 42% reconstituted potato, and the only British thing about them is the sound of popping the cap off a tennis ball tube, closely followed by a vague sense of disappointment. It was a public vote so controversial that it's attracted the inevitable questions.
Mr. Putin, did you interfere with the 2016 American election?
Absolutely not.
What about the 2016 Brexit referendum?
Yet, I deny this absolutely.
What about Channel 5's 2019 vote for Britain's favourite crisp?
Why, what have you heard?
I voted for Crispy McCrispface. Thank you very much. So, please welcome the finest thing to come out of Croydon since the A23, Lucy Porter.
Space travel. It may only be one small step for man, but apparently it's still too giant a leap for womankind. This week, NASA had to call off its first ever all-female spacewalk from the International Space Station when they discovered there was only one spacesuit that a woman could wear. We may have Captain Marvel and female Star Wars protagonists, but actual outer space disappointingly continues to fail the Bechdel test. On board the ISS, there were two suits that would have fitted the women, but one of them wasn't ready to use. They needed to change the cut and the fabric to spare the women the embarrassment of attending an event in the same outfit. We all know real space travel isn't as glamorous as the movies make it seem. For a start, astronauts have to wear nappies for spacewalks. But that makes cancelling the first all-female one even more upsetting, because you know how women like to go to the toilet in pairs. And it's not just in space that nobody can hear women scream. Caroline Criado Perez, fresh from getting Jane Austen on the £10 note and in the process upsetting your least favourite uncle, has recently written a book called Invisible Women. In the book, she explains how the world has been designed to a male blueprint, as opposed to a nice female floral print or an acceptable gender-neutral print of dinosaurs wearing tiaras. This gender bias in design will come as no surprise if you've ever had to use a women's public toilet. Women take longer to use the loo than men because of periods, because we're more likely to take young children in with us, and because we secretly sit there checking our Twitter feed. But traditionally, building design hasn't taken this into account, so we're left with the inevitable lengthy queues. And this doesn't just affect women, either. It has a knock-on effect for the men in our lives.
OK, darling, here's the loos. I'll meet you out here when we're both done.
OK, see you in a bit. Sorry, love, massive queue in the ladies as usual. You weren't too bored waiting for me, were you?
40 years have I stood here. The oceans rose, empires fell. My beard grew long and white, and still I waited for my one true love to return to me from beyond that shadowy veil they call the ladies' toilets.
Criado Perez argues in her book that the male-skewed design of the world can have serious, even fatal consequences for women, with female heart attacks often going misdiagnosed and car safety features leaving women more likely to be seriously hurt in crashes, although that is less of an issue now that Prince Philip's promised to stop driving. Mobile phones are also becoming harder for some of us to handle. If you're a man, you can pick up a smartphone and be like,
wow, it's like a shiny touchscreen computer that perfectly fits into the palm of my strong and rugged man hands. I'm off to celebrate by reaching things that have been placed very high up with my long legs and excellent upper body strength.
When I try to answer my phone, it's like watching a capuchin monkey trying to pick up a hardback copy of War and Peace. And even when I can pick up my phone, I've got nowhere to store it because for some reason, women's clothes never have pockets. Personally, I think it's a conspiracy. I reckon the fashion industry is in the pocket of the handbag industry. Yeah, to be fair, it's a lovely pocket with a really sturdy zip. Google's voice recognition software is 70% more likely to understand a male voice than a female one. Real people don't even listen to us, and now we have to put up with Google being all...
Sorry, love. Zoned out a bit there while you were yammering on. What was it you wanted? Something about shoes and chocolate.
It's unfair for women in general, but the way the world is designed is even more difficult for me, for two reasons. The first is, while being very small, 4 feet 11, I have accidentally married a 6 foot 5 inch giant and had two enormous children. The difference in scale in our household is ridiculous. We look like we were designed by Peter Jackson. The other reason is that I'm left-handed. So as well as everything being too big for me, my world is also designed backwards as far as my hands are concerned. So yes, we do need to start redesigning the world to make things easier for women. But more importantly, we need to redesign the world specifically to suit women who are under 5 feet tall and left-handed. We must say no more to tins stocked so high up on supermarket shelves that we need to go and ask someone taller for help getting it like we're children. Only to find that once we've got the tin, we can't open the bloody thing because the can opener's the wrong way round. No more sexism in space. We say let tiny women be astronauts. Let us be the ones to play golf on the moon this time and let us play it with left-handed clubs. But most of all, we want left-handed scissors. And we want to keep them in our many and massive pockets. Thank you.
Our next guest has just got a BAFTA nomination for her role in The MASH Report. Would you please welcome Rachel Paris.
William Wilberforce, Emmeline Pankhurst, Mahatma Gandhi, Uri Geller. Yes, this week a new political hero emerged when our nation received an offer of succour from the man who redefined compromised cutlery. In his open letter to Theresa May, the Israeli spoon botherer said, and I quote,
I love you very much, but I will not allow you to lead Britain into Brexit. Much as I admire you, I will stop you telepathically from doing this.
He urged all Britons to join him in stopping Brexit using our combined psychic energies. Cometh the hour, cometh Uri Geller. I think we all feel cold and scared, angry, numb and unprepared. Who will step forward to help us out? No, not you, Boris, shut your mouth. Who can rebuild this country from its broken pieces? Only someone who can do telekinesis. We really need a hero, someone to make our fear go, and we won't go anywhere near Gove, obviously. Uri Geller's gonna save us all. Uri Geller. answering the call we never made. He'll beat the ERG with psychic energy. We will leave this battle in a blaze of glory, finding solace in the face of Yuri. We tried to do it democratically, but he will do it telepathically. He's gonna have to do it really soon. And yes, it will involve a lot of spoons. And yes, he's clearly absolutely off his rocker. But if Teresa doubts him, he'll electric shock her. We've been working hard to find a painless deal, when all we needed was to bend some stainless steel. We've got to do what we've got to do. If not now, when? If not us, Yuri Geller! Yuri Geller's gonna save us all. Yuri Geller's answering the call we never made. We don't need those Tory fellas, they're just scribes and storytellers. We need 10 more Yuri Gellers in this land. Let's relent and let's get bent in Yuri's hand.
That was The Now Show, recorded before the historic third defeat of Theresa May's Brexit deal. I wonder if she's beginning to feel that people don't like it. Still, with an extension, at least the news quiz will have to deal with all this too. The show starred Steve Punk, Hugh Dennis, Zoe Lyons, Lucy Porter, Rachel Paris and Luke Kempner. It was written by the cast with additional material from Gareth Gwynne, Mike Shepherd, Catherine Brinkworth, Kat Sadler and Zoe Tomlin. The producer was Adnan Ahmed and it was a BBC Studios production.
Half past six, it goes out. Half past six.
It'll be fine.
It'll be fine.
And if not, we can just ask for an extension. We can go out maybe 9 o'clock, something like that.